Intercom is the business messaging platform that does the manual work for you, automatically qualifying leads and scheduling demos. Their chatbot and messenger free you up to focus on the prospects most likely to convert. You can leave your pipeline to chance, or you could use Intercom. Start for free at intercom.com/growth. That's intercom.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H. Hey, great news for Kevin Smith fans. Now you can hear the full archive of Smodcast shows like Fat Man on Batman, Jay and Silent Bob Get Old, and Hollywood Babylon right in Stitcher Premium. You can listen to the latest episodes of shows like Smodcast, where Kevin and his longtime collaborator Scott Mosier discuss everything from Rick and Morty to Colonel Mustard and any other absurd topics on their minds. There are hundreds of episodes in the Smodcast archives, and you can't find them anywhere else. Check them out with a free trial of Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcherpremium.com/smod, that's S-M-O-D, and use the promo code WOLFDEN for a free month of Stitcher Premium. The extra reason you should do this is because I was an integral part of making that deal happen. stitcherpremium.com/smod.
No egos here.
Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting.
I'm Chris Bannon.
And I'm not. I'm Lex Friedman.
And today our guests are Katie Yeiser and Ryan Natoli from The Onion's brilliant and lovable and funny podcast, A Very Fatal Murder.
Hi, Katie and Ryan.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're not supposed to talk yet. Before we get to them, we're going to talk about shows we're jealous of.
Okay.
The section of the show where we highlight shows we like that aren't necessarily mid-roll shows, but might be.
Yes, they often are. This one is not. My choice this week is Empire on Blood, the Panoply show about someone, a fellow named Calvin from the Bronx, who was a drug dealer and who was put away for murder back in the 90s. And it's an examination led by a street smart reporter named Steve Fishman, who got to know Calvin, got to know all the people involved, spent years, it seems, interviewing people and investigating the story, and really pulls apart Calvin's conviction. And it's a very personal and I think very well done true crime story that points out, as I think all the great true crime stories do, things that are wrong with the justice process in this country. And every locality has its own issues.
Right.
But if you listen to this show, you really get yet another window into what's possibly wrong with policing and the court system in the United States.
Wow.
It's really good.
The recommendation I'm going to make is I'm just full on cheating. This is a Stitcher Premium show, so you have to sign up for Stitcher Premium to do it. In theory, I'm supposed to know about the shows we make. I help greenlight them. I help with the budgeting, whatever. I had no idea what this show was when I saw it in Stitcher Premium. I have no recollection of us ever greenlighting it, but I loved it. It's called An Oral History of the 1993 Tappan Junior High School Talent Show. Fans of A Very Fatal Murder will absolutely love this show as well. It's written by Gabe Delahaye. And it features a cast of improvisers, including a bunch of Earwolf improvisers like Sean Clements, John Gabris, Lauren Lapkus, Tom Sharpling's in it, Tia Carrera's in it. And it is a scripted oral history because poor Gabe was supposed to perform his cover of Tia Carrera's Ballroom Blitz during the talent show that year in 1993 at the junior high school. And the talent show was cut short early, and he didn't get to perform this song, this cover, and he is convinced that that has changed the entire journey of his life, and he'd like to understand what the heck happened. And it is so painfully funny. I laughed out loud on the bus many, many times as I listened to it.
Do you know when we greenlit that show?
No.
3 years ago in 2015. It's a brilliant show, and Gabe just got busy and couldn't make it until this year.
So it was before I was part of the greenlighting process.
Correct. It was before there was a greenlighting. It was my I must greenlight a show every week process.
I loved it so much, so I highly recommend it.
It's brilliant.
Now, Katie, do you have a show you recommend?
Sure. It is very specific to my taste, but I like the podcast The Ford with Lance Armstrong because I am very much into doping and learning about it and hearing people talk about how they dope to win sport matches and games. Mm-hmm. And I don't... Sometimes I'll listen to it and I don't care about necessarily the guest or the conversations they're having, but I'm just listening for any chance that Lance Armstrong's going to like let slip a new detail of how he cheated to win a bike race because it's extremely interesting and funny to me, that whole thing.
Katie, is that a show that he's doing atonement for his past things, bad things? Is that what he's trying to do with this?
Yes, I think so. It's called The Forward because he's looking forward, moving forward, you know, not looking back. And whenever he kind of talks about cycling, he's always like, but we're not here to talk about cycling. We're here to talk about, you know, what's next and new things. But he'll sometimes talk about doping and some of the things he did, but it's for sure about atonement. And he always like takes a chance whenever he has it to kind of take a swipe at WADA or U.S. Doping, kind of anti-doping agencies, and kind of get his narrative out there. So this is great. He's just a personality who's just like a mix of like this alpha bully, but also someone who's very sensitive and still upset that people don't like him anymore.
If you do check out the foreword, you should listen. Usually 5 or 6 times an episode, you'll hear Lance say, "That's why they call it dope." So you should just.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're a big fan of the cognitive dissonance variety of shows genre.
Yes.
And Ryan, what about you?
Well, I admittedly am not, I'm a podcast novice, but one great thing about doing a very fatal murder is I've just been able to get more ingrained in it. So I'm finally
Ryan never knew of podcasts until we did a very fatal murder.
I was unaware of the medium.
He didn't know
but
it existed.
Now it turns out there's a lot of really great ones out there, and I'm finally getting into the big ones. The one I listened to recently was that great two-parter of Reply All. I believe it's called Tracer, which I found extremely fascinating, especially because my mom recently was scammed in a very similar way.
Wow.
Almost, at least. They caught it right at the last second, but it was a fascinating deep dive.
Ryan, I've got a great show for you. You might want to check out. It's a little show called Serial, and it's about an unsolved crime.
Oh, that does sound interesting. It sounds a little similar to what we did.
We're the only podcast that's done a podcast about a murder. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize there were murder podcasts.
Well, congrats on that.
Yeah.
So let's reintroduce you. We have Katie Eiser, who is the former video director of The Onion and the creative lead of AVFM. And we have Ryan Natoli, who is the current video director at The Onion and the director of AVFM. Did I get those titles right?
That's correct.
Yes.
Awesome.
Can you, just for those of us who haven't listened yet to A Very Fatal Murder, and I can't believe there's anyone who hasn't, can you tell them the basic premise and what happens over the course without giving away any, you know, any big reveals?
Sure. A Very Fatal Murder is a podcast about a one man's quest to find the perfect murder to create the perfect podcast. that man is David Pascal. He works for OPR, the largest public radio company in the world. And he goes off to a little sleepy town called Bluff Springs, Nebraska, to investigate the murder of Haley Price, a 16-year-old prom queen. She may have been 17.
I think she's 17.
17, yeah.
17
yeah.
at 17, time of death.
16 is too young for a prom queen, I believe.
That's true. She was a high achiever, so she could have been 16. who died from multiple gunshots, stab wounds, drowning, a plethora of really weird circumstances. And David goes to Nebraska to solve the murder, but also solve the ills of middle America in a way that only a New Yorker can.
Can I ask why hasn't The Onion done a podcast before? I've wondered that myself before A Very Fatal Murder came along. And then, and how did you guys decide, okay, it's finally time and this is what we should do?
Sure. I think any time something just really captures the nation's attention, The Onion typically asks, like, what would our version of that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we didn't do a podcast. I mean, doing a podcast was something we always talked about. But an earlier, almost about a year ago, I was talking with some folks at The Onion, and I was just like, it would be really fun to do a true crime parody podcast that's a full-on narrative, you know, anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. I think ours landed around 75.
Right. Yeah.
That follows one story about a big juicy murder. And with obviously like the podcast host being the star of the show. And then it was just like, there was such an oversaturation at that point of these types of podcasts. I think Dirty John had just wrapped up, Serial wrapped up, I think a year before that. And it was just obvious to us that one, this would be an extremely fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And two, I think if we did it right, people would really enjoy it.
Now, there have been The doing it right part is the part that I'm curious about. There have been folks who have parodied Serial and other true crime podcasts in different ways. What was the Onion's kind of creative process like to say, how can we make a parody in this genre that's going to be uniquely Onion-esque and not feel mm-hmm. like it's duplicating other stuff that's out there? Because it clearly stands alone as an original and
yes.
thoughtful parody.
And beautifully produced.
That's right. So what's the creative process to make sure that this is something that stands on its own?
Right. That's a great question. And something that we kept in the kind of the front of our minds when we were doing this. I think the Onion has a great history of whenever we take kind of a swipe at a genre or something that's very recognizable, is it feels all-encompassing. It's never just one thing. Like, I don't think A Very Fatal Murder was ever just Dirty John or just, or I'm sorry, is that right? Dirty John, yeah. Or just S-Town or just Serial. It was an all-encompassing kind of take on that genre where you had touches of all of those shows. Crime Town, all the, you know, millions of true crime podcasts. So that makes it feel big mm-hmm. and it makes it feel weighty. But then the real task, which is a fun task, is also making it feel singular at the same time. And that's where, you know, having a really strong host or protagonist comes in with a David Pascal character and having him feel like a unique person and not just kind of a cardboard cutout of a typical public radio host.
Yeah, you really succeeded there. I honestly couldn't tell. I thought, is this someone from the public radio world who's offered to voice this for them? Because he reads so much like everyone who, at this point, grew up listening to This American Life and Radiolab and a lot of other public radio stalwart shows, and just the tone and the sort of latent narcissism of a lot of public radio really, really comes out in this in a beautiful way.
And I don't want to spoil anything for our listeners, because if they like the witty repartee on The Wolf Den, they will love A Very Fatal Murder. But the journey that he takes as host was so thoughtful and hilarious and unexpected to me, mm-hmm. and I thoroughly enjoyed that piece of it too. Did
you search for the right person to do this, or was David Sidoroff, I guess, is a writer who mm-hmm. who eventually voiced David Pascal? How did you cast him?
Right. So this is one of my favorite things about A Very Fatal Murder. So David Sidoroff, we started working together at the Onion News Network around 2012. So he's been with the Onion for a long time and is one of the great Onion alumni, and Onion alum, I guess. And he was a writer on this podcast as like a contract writer. And he was one of the first people I reached out to be on this project mm-hmm. because David has such a great sense of narrative and characters and storytelling. And so he wrote on it for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then he went back to New York. And during our first table read, we were doing a read of it. And I think before then, I was kind of like, it could be fun if David was this person. And so Louisa, who wrote the first episode, named the podcast host David. And so we did the first table read.
And they were like, listen, his name is David. We have to cast him now. There's no other choice.
Yeah, right? We have no choice. That's how casting works. And so after the first table read, we were like, did anyone else read this in David's voice? Because I sure did. And yeah, David just has this perfect Onion public radio voice that's this perfect mix of like arrogance, and he's affable at the same time. I think someone described him perfectly as an affable sociopath.
Yeah. He's great at asking questions he already knows the answer to.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And David just does such a good job of playing, really is at the core, an unremarkable man who thinks he's the most remarkable man in the world.
Yeah.
And David is just so good at it. And it was just pretty a no-brainer to cast him. We didn't do any casting.
It made my job very easy. We didn't hold a single audition for that role.
He pretty much has the same sinus problems as every other major public radio host that I know. You really nailed that too.
Yeah, that's true. He was great, yeah.
And
I hope we've launched his audio career.
So you had a writer's room, I understand. How many people mm-hmm. and how long did it take you? And what was the process through which you plotted out the episodes? And is that a dog in the background?
That's one of the writers, actually.
Wow, you can hear that.
Yeah, that's the...
Yeah, that's Scruff. He was our head writer. So we had about six writers, I believe, who wrote the initial first drafts, and then I kind of whittled down a team for kind of honing in on second and third drafts and narrowing in on the story to about four people.
Mm-hmm.
Two lead writers, Louisa and Jen, or Louisa Kellogg and Jen Jackson, and then Marnie Schur and Fran Hoffner were kind of there as like story editors in a way, just to give notes on overall story arcs and turns and things. But to get back to your other question of how this was written and created, this was written in a pretty different way than I think most Onion things are, and which we really enjoyed, because this we knew right away that the only way this would work would be if it felt like an actual narrative that people wanted to follow.
Yeah.
Because you know we're very good at doing our jobs of being satirical and parodying and kind of hitting those pitch perfect satirical notes.
Yep.
But I think the way we pushed ourselves, or we really challenged ourselves to make sure that we had a full fleshed character, a narrative that was gripping and fun, first and foremost fun, because there's nothing worse than comedy that is more smart than it is funny. Mm. And so we did probably the first week or so, I brought in actually the entire staff. So an entire staff of probably 15 to 20 writers, a combined of video and paper writers. And we just had a big brainstorm. It was real fun. It was just a week of, what do you like about podcasts? What do you think is worth criticizing? What are some of your favorite tropes? What are some ideas? And it was just a week full of people just throwing ideas out, and then I would go back and kind of narrow in on them and hone them down. And there was some obvious stuff up first, where it's like I knew that it needed to be a murder and it needed to be in middle America and
right.
probably involve a white girl dying. And the host probably needed to be from New York and needed to be smarter than everyone. but then after that, I took a smaller team of writers, that's six or so I was talking about. And then took another about 2 weeks to just start storyboarding it out.
Yeah.
So that's when you discuss, you kind of go big to small of, you know, big goals, what do you want to happen, kind of big questions like who did it, why they did it, and then you kind of go from there and narrow in on episode turns and whatnot.
When you have the scripts done and you're in the studio recording, how much room did you make for improv? Did you let the actors play a little bit, or did you want them to stick to the script?
I think David especially had the most room for that, especially since he was writing on the podcast. I'm trying to think of a particular example of an improv line that made it in there, but we certainly did some improvisation on a lot of his lines. Not a lot, but the majority of the most of any character.
One of the nicest things about the show is that I didn't feel perform to, except in the way that you were trying to parody as podcasters mm-hmm. sometimes perform for audiences. It really was, the acting was also really natural feeling. And
yes. And what I found interesting is that the writing feels very much on brand for the Onion's writing, but it's much longer form than you typically think of Onion pieces as being, right? Maintain that Onion sensibility and voice throughout, I thought was interesting. However, I have to ask you a question. I loved not just the fake ads themselves, but also the transitions into those ads. And before we do our ads for this episode of The Wolf Den, I wanted to ask, you didn't put any real ads in. And my job here is I'm our chief revenue officer, so I'm in charge of making sure that all the things we do make money. How did you make money from the show? And if it wasn't with ads, why didn't you put ads in there? Was that a conscious choice? Or was it just that you didn't have my number yet?
Oh, I think BoxBox paid us quite well, actually.
Yeah, we have actually a little chart right now above us to just show, is this an arrow going up for A Very Fatal Murder profits? So I really don't know what you guys are talking about.
We really can't stack it fast enough.
Yeah. I believe they're recreating this in 17 different languages as we speak.
Nice.
I don't know how BoxBox translates in Serbia, but I'm sure that's making tons of money right now.
Lex and I were talking before we got on the line with you about The way in which this show is consistent with, you know, sort of Hallmark Onion moments like the headline after 9/11 that take things right to the edge. And you had JonBenet Ramsey as one of the sponsors in the show. And I thought, that's a very Onion thing. When you really go past someone's line and force them to think a little hard about, like, what is really behind all these murder podcasts?
Yeah, that was one of those that in the room when it came up was particularly dark, but we couldn't stop laughing at the idea of her just being, you know, in her late 20s, early 30s, just hosting a podcast as a regular woman. That's, you know, it's funny that way if you just treat it like she's just alive and well and doing a little podcast bump.
I'm really to no end to hear that compared to the 9/11 front page.
I think one is a little bit more meaningful than the other, but if you...
We appreciate it. We'll take it. Thank you.
We'll take it.
I'm almost curious to ask what crossed the line that you in the end decided not to put into the show.
Oh, gosh. You know...
I think you let them dodge an answer, though, on why they didn't put real ads in there.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, well, I can answer that. So,
go ahead.
And then Ryan, I'm sure, can build on it, but if he wants to. That was one of our kind of red lines, I guess, with this was we can't have any real ads in it, and they can't be in David's voice because that takes you out of the satire, I think, too much. And it would be confusing, I think, to go from David's voice and like being in character to then doing a real ad to then doing a fake ad. So we just thought, one, it would be kind of confusing. And we did, you know, we were like, if someone wants to advertise for this, it can be at the top and the bottom, but it has to be in a different voice. Yeah. So it's just clear to the listener that this isn't part of the joke.
Yeah.
And the great thing about working as at the Onion is, as a creative team, you get the autonomy to make those decisions and kind of protect the work you're doing in that way. So,
that
was nice.
Did you have to persuade anyone in the Onion hierarchy that this was a good way to spend money? I mean, it's a wonderful thing to do, but I do know that if they didn't plan for it last year, maybe your corporate overlords, would say you can't spend $11,000, whatever you spent to make this show, because it's not in the plan. How did you get around that?
Wow, great question. We got around that by sometimes just doing it. that was kind of when I was at the Onion was my MO. You just do it. You do it and you ask for forgiveness later. And certainly, like, to the businesses side of things to their favor, I guess, like they didn't know that it would be successful. I didn't know that it would be successful. So of course you're going to have questions of how much is this going to cost? Like, is this going to be an investment that's worth it?
And could you please tell us exactly how much it did cost to the nearest cent?
I truthfully don't have that exact number, but
yeah,
certainly. I mean, the thing about it is, that I'm sure of, is less than a video series of this caliber. In that respect, it's probably a good investment.
Yeah. I think it was one of those instances where you tell your overlords that, trust me on this, this is going to be good. And also the people that are writing it are Onion fans. And if we're getting excited about it, then Onion fans are going to get excited about it and love it. And it actually probably, like Ryan says, was cheaper than doing an actual video series. I mean, everyone you heard on that podcast, 80% of them were office people that we did not pay.
A lot of friends, but also there were a good handful of talented Chicago voiceover talent as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of friends. It was a friend project.
And are the overlords pleased?
I haven't been allowed to be out of this room for a year, so I don't think we've made enough money yet, but
I've been too busy doing interviews to take any of their calls, so I'm not sure.
Well, we want to dive deeper with you on the production, but before we do that, we're going to take our break for ads, and I leave it to the listener to decide whether these are real or fake ads that follow. But we'll be right back. If you have a cat, you know the worst part of cat ownership is the litter box. So true. But imagine having a lightweight, odorless, dust-free cat litter that monitors your cat's health and gets delivered right to your door every month. Are you imagining it, Chris?
You know, I'm already there, and I'm feeling good and dry.
It's Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter, it's a pun, Pretty Litter solves for the pains of having a litter box all while keeping tabs on your cat's health. It changes color when it detects common feline illnesses in your cat's pee. Who doesn't? Typical cat litter is heavy, dusty, smells, and you need 30 pounds of it to last a month. Pretty Litter is lightweight, 80% lighter than other cat litters, in fact. And one four-pound bag lasts an entire month for one cat. Not to mention, it has the best odor control of any other cat litter, and it's dust-free. No more dusty, smelly cat boxes. Pretty Litter even ships right to your door every month for free. Choose your ship dates, skip a month, and cancel any time. No tricks, no hassle, just a better cat litter delivered when you need it. And as far as I'm concerned, with Pretty Litter, it's better to be pissed on than pissed off. Discover the world's best cat litter today. Go to prettylitter.com and use code WOLFDEN to get 20% off your first order. If you're not using the promo code WOLFDEN to save 20% on kitty litter, I don't know what your problem is. That's prettylitter.com and use the code WOLFDEN to save 20% off your first order of Pretty Litter.
I'm really happy the promo code wasn't something about cat pee.
Determination, hustle, thrilling action. Rec League Basketball. Pistol Shrimps Radio is back wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you don't know the show, and I'm guessing you do, Mark McConville and Matt Gourley from Super Ego and a million more great podcasts like I Was There Too record live from the Los Angeles Women's Rec Basketball League. They really do. They call the courtside action as it happens, whether they know anything about basketball or not, and they do not. Just like Mark and Matt, this show is really funny, and they make ridiculous and absurd color commentary and cheer on Pistol Shrimps athletes like Aubrey Plaza, Stephanie Allen, Maria Blasucci, and Amanda Lund. I know Amanda. Get in on the most thrilling, almost sports event of the season with Earwolf's most ignorant sports announcers. Subscribe to Pistol Shrimps Radio now in your favorite podcast app like Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Thank you for doing those ads, Lex. We're back with Ryan and Katie, and we're going to talk a little bit more about a very fatal murder, the Brilliant Onion, a true crime parody podcast that came out this fall. It's unclear to me how many episodes there are. It could be five. It could be six. You have sort of five part one and five part two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to split it into two parts because it was such an incredible piece of investigative journalism that we wanted to give people a break in the middle to kind of recoup from, I'm sure, passing out or blacking out.
It
from
really
just
wouldn't
how
have been fair to just have them ingrained in such brilliance for
so
that long.
So it's clear that you really hate the way that many podcasters pad out their shows and break up the storylines and so forth. What else was on your sort of list of annoying things about podcasting that you wanted to take down in doing this series?
Well, you know, we had a big board of those things. I'm trying to think of some of my more favorite ones. One, I can give one that actually didn't make it in, but always makes me laugh and kind of made us laugh, was when podcasters, they'll say something like they'll talk about something they're seeing, and then they'll describe what it is like, we don't know what it is. And it'll be like, someone will be like, so I entered the building and I turned the doorknob. Now, a doorknob is a device that you turn to open a door so you can, so your body can enter the building. And it's like, yeah, I know. So that was fun. Long-winded metaphors that are unnecessary and don't matter or fun. Ryan, what were some of your favorites?
Oh, I love, I love the bombshells that happen midway through a season when it's clear that they have known of this bombshell since the first episode and could have just started with it. it's just a storytelling device, but that can drive me nuts sometimes for sure.
Do either of you actually listen to true crime podcast? I know, Ryan, you just discovered podcasting, so this is probably not a fair question, but like, do you listen to Up and Vanished or something for fun?
I have just discovered podcasts, but I've been a true crime junkie for quite some time. That being said, I am, because I've just discovered podcasts, I am still a bit of a true crime podcast novice. I've really only hit the big ones like Serial and S-Town and Dirty John.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I listen to thing, the only one I haven't really listened to is Up and Vanished, but which I've been told I need to. But yeah, I think everyone in the room too were pretty true crime podcast junkies as well, because we were so easily just able to, you know, draw something from like episode 3, season 1 of Serial, you know, off the top of our heads with no problem. And so, yeah, we all listen to these and we eat them up and like them. And, but then I think it's, and I think hopefully what the podcast did to a certain level is just like kind of also step back and be like, wait, why do we like this? And like,
right.
What is this? This is weird. It's like, we love unsolved murders and we're making it to like a commodity, and it's, I don't know, like I eat them up, but I also like, I'm curious of like, should I be doing this? I'm not sure.
And did you hear from anyone? Did Phoebe Judge write you and say, I'm really enjoying this? Or any people who do true crime stories say, thank you for delivering this to the world?
Huh. We've heard from like public NPR people, mm-hmm. Different like public radio folks, and just other people in kind of like the business. But I don't think I've heard directly from anyone from a true crime podcast.
I actually heard that Sarah Koenig was seeing if Adnan Syed gets released, if he would put a hit out on everybody involved in this project. That was
wow.
Oh,
oh my God! I gotta.
What a way to go!
I gotta burn off my fingerprints.
a question I had on the production side was, I mean, obviously you guys have tons of experience on making video, and we talked about how audio is different. Did you bring anybody in on the production who came from the world of radio or from podcasting, or did you really kind of just make it up on your own and figure out the best way to do this?
No, we kind of made it up on our own. I think maybe our sound recordist, Charlie Eckhouse, is probably the closest thing. He just has an extensive audio background. And Ryan Staples mixed the podcast. He's done some radio work in the past, but I think as far as like the actual production of it, it was mostly our video team just figuring out how to make a good podcast, which was
that's
a lot of fun. There's just so much more interesting world building you can do when you don't have to see the thing happen. You just can hear these worlds.
Well, don't be alarmed, but we're going to have the entire Earwolf team start making funny videos. So just get ready for that.
No, we're not.
Good luck making money on that.
Video, no. How many weeks total would you say it took you all to make this series? It's 5 or 6 episodes.
Scripting included?
Yeah, scripting included.
Scripting was probably, along with like the time I took to edit, I would say 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's pretty fast, really.
Approved.
I think.
Approved.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how long in the studio? A week?
Roughly. We actually only recorded with David for 2 days. He has another job and flew out from New York for a weekend, and we knocked it all out in the very room we're sitting in now over the course of a weekend, which I think David was starting to go insane by the end of that, as all of us were.
That's incredible, really.
Yeah. I mean, like, can you win a Pulitzer for that? I don't know.
I don't know if they have, if that's a no, field box you can fill out.
He sounds incredibly, like, annoyingly relaxed and complacent, which I think if you had to actually jam all that line reading into one weekend, would be a great feat of acting. Possibly Tony Award
truly,
winning.
Yeah.
He was very drunk the whole time, is my guess.
Yeah. He doesn't remember any of it.
It was a lot of tea. A lot of tea.
And then you guys did the rest of the stuff in just a week, right?
Yeah, it was only a few other days of recording other things that didn't involve David. It was roughly about a week in the studio, and I want to say about 6 weeks total for until all the episodes were done and ready.
When a project like this doesn't have ads as its primary purpose for existing, how do you measure success? How did you and your higher ups know that, yes, this was a worthy investment of Onion time and resources?
I mean, hopefully the feedback has been a nice marker of that. And I think it's one of those projects that we would put under the category of a brand builder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as it kind of kills me to say the phrase brand builder. But
Do you think it had some synergies also?
Yeah, some synergies and some cross-platform bridging, perfect. I'm sure happened there. But yeah, I think like there's value in that. And then I don't know, Ryan, you could speak to like maybe people will want to pay us to do more in the future. I have no idea.
Yeah, I can give anyone my number who would like it. We'd love that.
Well, That actually does bring me to a point I wanted to actually use this opportunity to encourage you to do, and that is make more. David Pascal is a character that I want to hear more from, and I think having assembled this writer's room and this process that's worked very effectively, you guys should absolutely make more shows. Please.
Oh, well, thank you.
We'll do it right now. We'll make one just for you.
Well, now that we have this endorsement. Yeah,
no one else can hear it but you.
Now, so right now you have experience making limited series. Do you think The Onion would ever consider doing a weekly show or even a daily show?
Oh, that's interesting. We don't have that on the books as of now, but I think just exploring podcasting in general is something The Onion would be interested in doing, whether it takes on a weekly or a daily or just another a format similar to a weekly or daily style show. It's certainly something that would be interesting.
Yeah. And the challenge is always, because like you can think of any format to do as much as you want. You know, that's not the hard part.
Right.
Like, yeah, you could theoretically do a weekly podcast or a daily podcast, but the real challenge with working at The Onion is how do you make it like worth it and like transcendent in a way, because this is our bar for the creative side of it is very high. Mm-hmm. So you always have to kind of ask yourself that, because yeah, you can do just about anything. We could do our version of anything, but like what's the actual version of something that will cut through the millions of things that come on your Twitter feed.
I want to be clear. I wasn't asking for 1,000 shitty copies of this show.
thank you.
I did, Katie, I did want to ask you, I read somewhere that the writer's room was mostly made up of women, and that's mm-hmm. something that is unusual, I think, in the world of comedy writing still these days.
Yeah, unfortunately it is, but that was something that is true and I'm very proud of. The first round of kind of first drafts, I think it was kind of split down the middle of three men, I think, and three women. But then when we narrowed in on rewrites and kind of reworking the story, because about halfway through the writing process, we ripped out essentially the middle of the podcast and rewrote it.
Oh, wow.
Not because the writing was bad. It was just the story
because
didn't
it was
work.
Terrible.
And
oh,
it wasn't,
God.
There wasn't anything tethered to kind of a forward-moving story.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that did that were all women. And so, like, the core of the A Very Fatal Murder writing team were women. And I think a comedy room led by women and or led by people who work like women,
mm-hmm.
I think is really good because it's absent of a lot of ego. And it's a certainly more joyous room at times.
Hmm.
And it also helped, to be honest, that we're all great friends.
Yeah.
And it was just a bunch of buds trying to make each other laugh. And it was truly like, it felt at the end of it like just our little personal project. and I think it was almost seen as that way because we go off in a room kind of to the side and kind of almost like off the books and write this podcast that we all loved. And we had no idea it was going to blow up in the way that it did. So when it did, it was just like such a nice little cherry on top of just this like wonderful project that we got to do together in a way that you don't really see in a lot of comedy rooms.
Why do you think, what you just said something really interesting. Why do you think male-dominated writer rooms are less joyous? I'd love to know.
I really pigeon myself a whole there.
No, I can answer. I mean, that. It's interesting observation.
It's because we're horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's the easy answer. I want to hear the details.
Yeah. Well, I think, and you hear this too on like sets from like people who have been on sets where there's a female director or a minority director. I don't know. I think those rooms are just a little bit more welcoming. You don't have to really worry about like hierarchy rules that kind of can feel like fraternal at times.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's just, but it's also like, it's this great mix of every room that I've been in that I've led or been a part of that's been female centric. It's been this like nice mix of everyone's ideas can be on the table. There's no like intimidating hierarchy, but also it's still like a room where there is a clear leader and there's going to be decisions made that, well, I'm not answering that very well.
No, I think that's, I mean, I put you in a difficult spot, but I'm just curious, because you've been in both, I am sure you feel something really different happened here, and that is something to celebrate.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think it's also, too, me being nervous about maybe other guys listening to this who have been my bosses or been running rooms.
Well, they
but that's
suck.
Also like that's a yeah right. And then that's another thing too is like, oh well, women should do that less too, and women should apologize less when they say that it's good for women to be in charge.
Right.
So no, I mean it's a thing where I may have not answered it that eloquently, but I do think that those rooms are typically more fun to be in.
Yeah.
And I'm fine standing by that statement.
Good.
I love that. So listen, many, many important people, podcasters, aspiring podcasters, listen to The Wolf Den eagerly refreshing their podcast feeds on the weekly to see
it's
if there's a new
a
episode.
Lie.
Maybe some of those many tens of millions of listeners are interested in comedy writing or production. So we'd like to ask you if you have advice. You guys did something unusual. There aren't that many, in my mind, scripted comedy podcasts, right? There's plenty of comedy podcasts, almost all of which are like almost strictly improvisational.
Right.
And then there's this, which is a very decidedly different look and feel. What advice would you give to folks who want to try to not emulate The Onion specifically, but to come up with their own ways of finding new ways to be funny in podcasting?
I think one of the first times that Katie listened to A Very Fatal Murder for the first time, she said something that has kind of stuck with me, that is, this is really great. What's so great about it is that when you listen to it, you can tell that the people who made it had fun doing it. And I think there's just something to be said. And you touched on it, Katie, when you were talking about the feelings in the room, is just if you can have fun doing it, then it's probably worth doing and it's probably going to turn out pretty well.
Yeah, I think comedy doesn't need to be a chore. It doesn't mean that it can't be hard. It should be hard and it should be difficult at times. But overall, it should be something that excites you and is fun. And so I just chased after ideas that are exciting and fun, definitely more funny than they are impressive or smart. always, you know, have that carry it to a certain degree, but, you know, just do stuff that you think is fun and funny. And if that's true, it's going to come through in the final product.
I think
we'll transcend other ideas.
Also, buy really expensive microphones. Because if you buy really expensive microphones, it's going to sound a lot better and funnier.
Yes, it's true.
At least if you buy really expensive microphones, you'll feel added pressure to do a good job. Well, I spent all the money on this microphone. I have to make a good show now.
That's true. You got to have some motivation.
Well, Katie Eiser, Ryan Natoli, where should our listeners follow you both online? I know they should go to The Onion, but where else can they follow you specifically? Where can they stalk you?
Where can they stalk
online?
You?
If you go to www.linkedin.com, I think I have a pretty... No.
Check out my resume.
I have a Twitter account that is not good, but it's just my / Katie Eiser, KATYYEISER. I tweet a lot about the soups I make sometimes, the shows I watch on TV, just really what's happening in my life. I'm sorry if you follow me and don't know me, because you'll probably be confused.
And Ryan?
Yeah, unfortunately, I also have a pretty dormant Twitter account. I'll tell you what, if you can find me on Facebook and ask to be my friend, I might say yes.
You can watch my reel.
Yeah, you can check out my reel.
KatieEiser.com.
That's great. Well, thank you both.
Hire me.
Thank you both for making this series, which really was a highlight of my winter listening. And I really want to encourage you to make more because it was so good.
Yeah, we loved it. And thank you for your time here. We also have to thank Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell. Exciting news for Wolf Den fans. Jared's birthday was just a few days before this episode was released, and Harry's is in a couple of days. So we would like all Wolf Den listeners right now to scream wherever they are, happy birthday, Jared and Harry. We'll pause. Thank you for
happy
that.
Happy birthday, Jerry.
Happy birthday.
There it is. Subscribe to the show at Earwolf, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever the hell you want. And don't forget to rate us in your podcast app of choice. Thanks again for listening. And thanks again to Ryan and Katie.
Hi, my name's Matt Gourley.
My name is Mark McConville.
And we do a podcast called Pistol Shrimps Radio.
Every Tuesday night, the Pistol Shrimps play basketball. They're a women's team in the recreational leagues here in Los Angeles, California.
And we bring a table, some microphones, and our very selves to call play-by-play basketball action.
Mostly we talk about what we want to talk about while basketball's happening, because but occasionally there's action that needs to be reported on, and we do that.
But we don't know anything about sports, so if you are not a sports person, good. If you are, good. This thing's literally made for every human being on this, our planet.
Listen to Pistol Shrimps Radio every Wednesday on Earwolf. Get it!
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.